This is day two of this April 2018 seven-day session. And we'll resume reading from the teachings of 12th century Chinese Zen master Foyan. This is from the book called Instant Zen, translated by Thomas Cleary. We pick up now with another letter. He says, generally speaking, practical application of Zen requires detachment from thoughts. It's a good little summary of Zen practice. There are different ways to describe Zen practice, but that's one. Just learning to detach from our thoughts. He said, this method of Zen saves the most energy. It just requires you to detach from emotional thoughts and understand that there is nothing concrete in the realms of desire, form, and formlessness. Only then can you apply Zen practically. If you try to practice it otherwise, it will seem bitterly painful by comparison. Requires you to detach from emotional thoughts. There's a story that he relates a little later in this book that I'm going to turn to, and it's what he means by emotional thoughts as an example. He says, once there was a disciplinarian monk. Disciplinarian is a poor translation, I think, but another translator refers to this as a Vinaya monk. The Vinaya school is the school that places all their eggs in the basket of the precepts. It's a whole big school, or was in Asia, a school that emphasizes study and mastery of the Buddhist precepts. In other words, morality, upright conduct. And this Vinaya monk had kept the precepts all his life. As he was walking one night, he stepped on something that squished, which he imagined to be a frog, a mother frog laden with eggs. Key word there is imagined. Mortified at the thought of having killed a pregnant frog, when the monk went to sleep that night, he dreamed that hundreds of frogs came to him demanding his life. He was utterly terrified. It's important here that to the fact that he was a Vinaya monk, which means he'd be more likely than monks of other Buddhist schools to be obsessive about the precepts, maybe neurotic about the precepts. When morning came, the monk went to look for the frog he had squashed and found that it had only been an overripe eggplant. At that moment, the monk's perplexities abruptly ceased. Realizing there is nothing concrete in the world, for the first time he was really able to apply it practically in life. So this is kind of a classic story to drive home the point that our mind determines how we perceive things. Or as we said yesterday, that everything we perceive is a projection of our own mind. Our state of mind creates realities that others may not see. And this is most dramatically at play in Sesshin when we can reach depths of the mind where our reasoning mind, our rational mind, does not provide much of a check. So people can create scenarios in Sesshin that aren't there at all. Once or twice, I remember someone coming to Doksan and wanting to know why the monitors were angry with them, which was purely a creation, a figment of their imagination. There was a time when in the 1980s, when we were still having sesshins in the city at Arnold Park, where a cat directly across the street from the center, a cat found its way up a tree, way up a tree, and couldn't get down. Okay, we've all heard of that. But this cat was meowing plaintively for hours and hours and hours and hours. Of course, everyone in Sesshin was aware of it, hearing this hideous meowing of this cat. And so I was leading the Sesshin and looked into it. I found out that even the fire department said, we don't do that. We don't come and get cats out of the trees. There were passers-by, went out and looked, and there were passers-by who were standing under the tree. No one knew what to do. It went on for about a day and a half. People were flipping out in Sesshin. Someone came to Doksan in tears and said, don't you have a compassion? Why can't you do something about this cat? Finally, one of the neighbors knew a friend of a friend who was an arborist, and this guy just scrambled up the tree faster than the cat ever would have made it up the tree. And gently, I watched him work, just gently lifted the cat off the little branch where he was crouched, and brought him down, and the drama was over with. But the way, especially in Sesshin, the way we can create dramas out of nothing, if only we had had an arborist of that Sesshin of our own, we could have sent him out. Fearless arborist. In Sesshin, the mind, as it grows more empty, it gets free of thoughts, we are more likely to create something out of nothing. Nature abhors a vacuum, and that's why, as Sesshin goes on, many interesting kinds of things can occur in people's minds. Having realized after the last Sesshin here how much more we could do to prevent contagion, already heard from a couple people who are hear a cough or a persistent cough and think there must be something dreadful happening there. I just want to say that the monitors are all over this as never before. And just because something may sound worrisome doesn't mean it's infectious. The larger point is we cannot trust the mind, that is, the workings of the mind, the phenomena of the mind. We can only trust what is beyond the mind. And for each one of us, that is this, we access that what is beyond the mind through the practice we're working on. That's the whole point of it. No matter what it is, breath, koan, anything, it's to help us detach from thoughts. As he opens this chapter by saying, practical application of Zen requires detachment from thoughts. Another way of understanding is having the presence of mind, or having the detachment, to see everything that's going on in the mind as just phenomena. Passing phenomena, transitory phenomena that come and go, physical phenomena, mental, emotional phenomena that come and go. There's a lot of what Sesshin comes down to is just having the awareness day by day, hour by hour, that whatever is going on is in flux. It's not essential to our nature. It's not to be trusted. Certainly our thoughts are not to be trusted, ever. This is especially important when we have doubts arise in the mind, is to recognize a doubt, that is, a doubt about oneself, a doubt about the practice, to recognize it as nothing more than a thought, and nothing to cling to or pay any credence to. He pursues this further. Now I ask you, when he stepped on it by night, was it a frog or an eggplant? If it was a frog, yet when he looked at dawn, it was an eggplant. If it was an eggplant, yet there were frogs demanding his life the night before. So again, how real the dreams of this monk, how real they were at the time. Can you decide, he says? I'll try to decide for you. And then he presents a verse. Feelings of frogs may be shed, but the idea of eggplant remains. If you would be free of the idea of eggplant, strike the evening chime at noon. So even calling it an eggplant, which would be the conventional way, okay, what is that? Well, it's an eggplant. We have that name for it. But even that is a notion. It's a designation that we came to agree we would call that that object. His point is that life itself is very much a dream. That everything is the projection of our mind. Everything is mind. This is presented right quite dramatically in a koan in the Mumonkan. Number 41, Bodhidharma and Mind Pacifying. Bodhidharma, he's the founder of Zen. This is like roughly the 500s AD. Bodhidharma sat in Zazen facing the wall. The second patriarch-to-be, who had been standing there in the snow, cut off his arm and said, "Your disciple's mind is not yet at peace. I beg you, my teacher, please give it peace." Bodhidharma replied, "Bring your mind here and I will set it at rest." The second patriarch said, "I have searched for that mind, but I cannot find it." Bodhidharma said, "Then I have put it to rest." I have searched for that mind, but I cannot find it. He Even the word mind we can make into an abstraction, something out there, apart from us. Much less the perceptions of mind. Another letter. There is not much to Buddhism, he says. It only requires you to make a statement plainly and simply. That is all. But what is a plain and simple statement? If someone asked me, I'd say, it's already become two statements. Understand? An ancient said, the Buddhas and Zen masters have given a clear and detailed explanation of what is beyond words, but most of those who get here are confused, muddled, and uncomprehending. And then he, that's the end of the quote, and then he himself, Foyan, says, if you don't see this, you are asleep on your feet. You are always in the light and yet do not know it, even with your eyes open. How do you expect me to do anything for you? Next letter. What do you people come to me for? Each individual should lead life autonomously. Don't listen to what other people say. An ancient declared, I knew how to lead life by the time I was 18. You people must learn to live independently. In other words, by the time our brain has developed by that age or by the age of 25, now they say is when it's fully developed, we have everything we need. He continues, you say, lead what life? And then he answers, just do not seek elsewhere. Most people today are compulsively active. Imagine what he would think today. This was the 12th century. Most people today are compulsively active. This is already not knowing how to lead life. This is called abandoning home, scattering the family, and becoming a drifter. Clearly, this is not understanding. So here he's warning that becoming a monk, following that direction in life, isn't enough to get free of this agitated mind. Just searching and seeking, studying a bit of intellectual knowledge, memorizing a few sayings is called hauling manure inside. When you get here, your actions have to be truly accurate. Eventually, it will sink in thoroughly, and then you will understand. An ancient said, everywhere is you. Go east, and it's you. Go west, and it's you. Who are you? If you say, me, this is emotional and intellectual consciousness which you must pass through before you attain realization. In ancient times, Vasubandhu asked Asanga, elder brother, when you went to the inner palace, what teaching did Maitreya expound to you? Asanga replied, he expounded this teaching. And then Foyan asks the reader, now tell me, what teaching is this? You must be able to discern it before you can realize it. teaching is this. He continues, don't say that what is speaking right now is it. That's not quite right. As soon as there is an affirmation, there is a denial. That is the reason why it is said that no verbal expressions correspond to this reality. Yeah, so just to say anything is it suggests that there are things that are not it. It's limited. What you must do is live in harmony with it. This matter is not in another. But are you in tune with it? And if you are in tune with whom? If you say you are in tune with the ancients are gone. If you say you are in tune with a teacher has no connection with you. This is why the sages compassionately told us to tune into the source of our own minds. Now tell me, what is the source of mind to which one tunes in on one's own? If you mindfully try to tune into mind, you will definitely be unable to tune in. You have to tune in with mindless mind. Now this is an important point. Here he distinguishes. He says, if you mindfully try to tune into the mind, you will definitely be unable to. You have to tune in with mindless mind. Here we get into some semantics. Three words that should be distinguished. Mindfully, no-mindedly, and mindlessly. Mindfully, as he's using it, suggests consciously, deliberately trying to do something, which has value. We don't want to be mindless. Mindless is, means unaware. But the word we more commonly use in Zen is no-mindedly. It's when we, it's through no-minded awareness that we reach a state of intimacy or connectedness with everyone and everything. That's where the practice comes in. Whichever practice we're working on, draws us into this no-minded state. No-minded means without thought, beyond thought. It's like in a sport. I'll speak of tennis because that's the only sport I play. When you're learning it, you have to be very mindful. You have to be aware of your footwork and your strokes and this and that. But then beyond that, to become more advanced, that has to become incorporated, all of the techniques, and so that you can play no-mindedly. Automatically, maybe, is not a bad word for that. So it's just the body responding. There's no need for thinking. That's where the training comes in. These great players train for hours and hours a day, for year after year, decades, so that when they're in these very very tight match, their body knows how to respond. Because the thinking mind just creates problems. And it's the same with practice. When we're getting started, we can be awfully conscious of posture and technique. And I think for most of us, maybe all of us, we have to go through that. That's a stage we have to go through, is to get ourselves sorted out so that we can forget it. We can forget technique. We can forget posture and just put our hearts into it. Put the whole mind into it, not just this little fragment of the conscious mind, the planning, deliberative, analytical mind, but this mind with a capital M. It's a progression that happens even within the week, 1 week of sesshin, where early at this stage, this is day two, still many people are trying to get themselves settled and thinking of this and thinking of that. But then as time goes on, this realm of no mind prevails. It takes over. And it's trusting that makes all the difference. And that realm of no mind we access through the particular practice we're working on. That's the portal to this no mind, this mind free of thoughts. When we are one, or put to the degree that we are one with Mu, one with the breath, one with what is this, who am I, to the degree that we're one with our practice, we will be in tune with everything, everyone. Next letter, he continues, you must be attuned 24 hours a day before you attain realization. Have you not read how Ling Yun suddenly tuned into this reality on seeing peach blossoms? He's talking, of course, about enlightenment experiences. How Xiangyan set his mind at rest on hearing the sound of bamboo being hit. To go back to this first sentence, you must be attuned 24 hours a day before you attain realization. Well, that would be deep realization. For a lesser awakening experience, you don't have to be attuned 24 hours a day. It's great if you can be, but all it takes is a moment of absolute no-mindedness to open the mind, for the mind to awaken. But there must be at least that moment before there can be the awakening. Again, he quotes an ancient, if you are not in tune with this reality, then the whole earth deceives you, the environment fools you. And then he himself says, the reason for all the mundane conditions abundantly present is just that this reality has not been clarified. I urge you for now to first detach from gross mental objects. 24 hours a day you think about clothing, you think about food, you think all sorts of various thoughts. You're like the flame of a candle burning unceasingly. Here, in this context, he means it's not a good thing to be burning like that with desire, with craving. Just detach from gross mental objects, and whatever subtle ones there are will naturally clear out and eventually you will come to understand spontaneously. You don't need to seek. This is called putting conceptualization to rest and forgetting mental objects, not being a partner to the dusts. Dusts are thoughts, mental defilements or contaminants, such as opinions. Just let those fond opinions go. This is why the ineffable message of Zen is to be understood on one's own. I have no Zen for you to study, no doctrine for you to discuss. I just want you to tune in on your own. This phrase that he's been using so much the last couple of pages, to tune in, is his, I think, probably a kind of unusual choice of words. I think other texts would more commonly say to come into accord with, or we could say in the negative, do not separate yourself from, do not stand apart from. Again, he wraps it up. The only essential thing in learning Zen, or to practicing Zen, is to forget mental objects and stop rumination. This is the message of Zen since time immemorial. Didn't one of the patriarchs say, freedom from thoughts is the source, freedom from appearances is the substance? It's a good one. Freedom from thoughts is the source. So, people who wonder, what do you mean by the source? How do I reach the source? Well, get free of thoughts. Stop trafficking in thoughts. Freedom from appearances is the substance. Don't trust appearances. Consider that every perception is the projection of your own mind. You're creating realities. Though what you think of as reality is a creation of the mind. Here he says, people have eyes by which they can see all sorts of forms, like long and short, square and round, and so on. Then why do they not see themselves? It says their own nature. Just perceiving forms, you cannot see your eyes even if you want to. Your mind is also like this. Its light shines perceptively throughout the 10 directions, encompassing all things, so why does it not know itself? This takes us back to this exchange between the second patriarch-to-be and Bodhidharma that we just read. Do you want to understand? Just discern the things perceived. You cannot see the mind itself. And then he again quotes an earlier master, the knife does not cut itself, the finger does not touch itself, the mind does not know itself, the eye does not see itself. To which he says, this is true reality. However, while it's true that the mind does not know itself, in the sense of ordinary knowing, can come into, you can realize this, what we call mind. You can realize one's own nature, which is beyond knowledge. Knowledge doesn't help us. It's becoming the thing itself through direct experience. Realizing means to make real. Knowing about something or someone is not the same. It's still on the outside, it's still peripheral. It's only by realizing things that we really know them, with a capital K, know. It's a short one. If someone should question you, how would you speak? Can you speak effectively? If you can only speak after thinking and concentrating, what use is your statement? At midnight, how do you speak? Getting up at dawn, how do you speak? In the hallway, in the washroom, how do you speak? Can you speak effectively? Your eyes must be clear before you can. In Zen, we speak of no-gap responses. If we allow gaps, then we tend to drift into thoughts. Thoughts of right or wrong, the right answer, the wrong answer. We very much prize the no-gap response from the guts. Continues, as soon as you rationalize, it's hard to understand. You must refrain from rationalization before you can attain realization. Well, by rationalization, he means, in the broader sense, of using the rational mind, limiting one's understanding to what is rational, reasoning. You must refrain from rationalizing, I think that's a better word, or you must refrain from using the rational mind before you can attain realization. Of course, needless to say, there's a place for using the rational mind. It means not being attached to the rational mind. Hearing such talk, some people immediately declare, I have nothing to say at all, and no reason either. So this is more of that Zen talk that we referred to yesterday. And he says, they do not realize this is in fact a rationalization. It's still drawing from the mind of learning, of what one has picked up through, in this case, Zen culture, making a declaration like that. I have nothing to say at all. My mind is beyond reason. And then Foyan says, I will settle something for you right now. The ultimate rule is to see your own mind clearly. This is what Buddhism is, as far as I am concerned. To see your own mind clearly. An ancient said, the mind does not know itself, the mind does not see itself. So then he says, so how can you see it clearly? throwing it back at us. Even though it's your own mind, it's hard to see. All the sages since time immemorial have been people who clearly saw their own minds. My late teacher was someone who saw his own mind, but among those here who were also associated with him in the past, there are very few who clearly see their own minds. Of course, he's talking about realization. And then he says, mind does not see mind. To get it, you must not see it as mind. This is a realm apart from thoughts. Don't make the mistake of trying to ponder these things while sitting. He's throwing them out to get people to detach from their ordinary discriminating mind. All we need, all anyone needs in doing this practice is the practice, the particular practice you're working on. The last thing you want to do is to be dwelling on these statements, these paradoxical and other statements that are so confounding. Time is up. We'll stop now and recite the four vows. All beings without number, I vow to liberate. Endless blind passions, I vow to uproot. Dharma gaze beyond measure, I vow to penetrate. The great way of Buddha, I vow to attain. All beings without number, I vow to liberate. Endless blind passions, I vow to uproot. Dharma gaze beyond measure, I vow to penetrate. The great way of Buddha, I vow to attain. All beings without number, I vow to liberate. Endless blind passions, I vow to uproot. Dharma gaze beyond measure, I vow to penetrate. The great way of Buddha,